the back, did you?
Okay, good. In one sense, I'm a bit of an outsider at this meeting, in the sense that I've not taken any courses from Don in the 1950s or 60s. On the other hand, I've been a frequent visitor to various places in Canada, and I've always felt very welcome here. As a graduate student in the 1970s, I became aware of this thing called fiducial inference and pivotal inference. This was through, I guess you'd call them Canadian missionaries, that I encountered as fellow graduate students at Imperial College. It was particularly Vern Farewell, but also David Binder. And so I became aware of that. And in fact, even in the very first course that I took as an undergraduate from Lynn Billard in 1970, if I remember correctly, maybe 1971, the word fiducial distribution came up in the course exactly once. And I remember her writing up fiducial, and she looked around with a smile on her face, never explained anything. For which I should probably be grateful. That was my first introduction to fiducial inference, and it was years afterwards before I became aware of what it really was about. I'm still struggling with it. What is striking to me about this meeting is the passion that the various people who have encountered Don over the years bring to statistics. And it's not a passion to agree on any particular point, though. No two of them agree on any point, as far as I can see. There's David Andrews, who nobody could agree with on anything. Who others? Steve Feinberg as well, and that they don't agree on very much. And Art Dempster, well, nobody agrees with him. And so I feel quite at home here. The other thing that's clear to me is that the passion that the students of Don have brought to statistics, that everybody agrees that statistics is important. Kai Ing thinks that it's responsible for the global financial crisis, for example. Or misuse of statistics. Others regard it as the basis of the structure of the universe. Larry Wasserman, for example, with these filaments of his imagination in the structure of the cosmos, and Richard Lockhart using it to study the large. So it goes from the very largest scales to the very smallest scales. Statistics all the way, even to the soccer field in between. So statistics covers the entire spectrum. Now, I had planned, well, I've been thinking about what I would talk about, and I had thought of talking about fiducial inference, but I thought, well, no, do something different. That's a bit a topic of some disagreement, so I'll talk about improper mixtures and see how that goes. But that's just as thorny a topic. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. So this is joint work with Han, and what we're trying to do here is to look at improper mixtures and to see if Bayes' theorem applies to improper mixtures. And what do I mean by that? Well, you first have to, first of all, think of what is Bayes' theorem. And to me, Bayes' theorem is just conditional probability. There's no you don't have to sell your soul to the devil or anything like that. There's no beliefs. I don't believe in anything. So there's no beliefs. It's just conditional probability. So when I talk about Bayes' theorem, I'm talking about conditional probability. Let's see. That's my outline. So let me just say what... there are going to be no data in this, in case you ask when and comes to slide 22. Where's the data? There's no data. Okay. So what do I mean here by models, Bayesian and non-Bayesian, and what are the fundamental differences here? A non-Bayesian model is a family of probability distributions. There's a parameter space, there's an observation space. I would usually use S for the observation space, or something related to the observation space. The first line there has S equal to R infinity. That just means infinite sequences. I don't mean that you're going to observe the whole sequence. Usually you just observe the values of the first whatever number of components. So S is going to be something to do with the observation space, although it might not be the observation space itself. So a non-Bayesian model is a family of probability distributions. The essence, and is on this observation space, and the essence is that there's more than one, at least one, but usually more than one, and usually infinitely many. A Bayesian model is simply one probability distribution, just one. And that's what makes the Bayesian setup so much easier. You're just dealing with a single process. You can calculate conditional distributions to your heart's content, and as long as everybody agrees on what the single distribution is, there's no problem. So, but the single distribution is not necessarily the distribution on the observation space, it's the distribution on the product space. And that's got by putting on a mixture, which I usually denote by pi. So pi is a probability distribution. And then you have a joint distribution. And it's such that the conditional distributions match up with those of the frequentist or the non-Bayesian model. I shouldn't perhaps use the word frequentist, because these are both probability models. Okay, so the Bayes, the application of Bayes' theorem just says, begin with this joint distribution, which you're given, or which somehow comes from somewhere, and you just calculate the conditional distribution. So associated with every possible observation, I should say associated with every possible sample size n, and every y in the observation space, you get this conditional distribution. And that's Bayes' theorem. So what I'm asking now is, can we construct a Bayes' theorem from an improper prior? Well, what are the issues? Let's see. Okay, I think that's all of that. I've gone the wrong direction. Okay, so now let's move to improper mixtures. The trouble is with an improper mixture is that it's not a probability distribution. And when I say improper mixture, I mean that it's typically the total measure will be infinite. So I will use mu of theta to mean a measure on the parameter space theta such that the total mass is infinite. If the total mass is finite, you can just divide out and you're back in the probability domain. But if it's infinite, then this product doesn't define a probability distribution on the joint space. So there's no conditional probability in the ordinary sense. Nonetheless, if you go through the formal Bayes calculus, and I do want to distinguish between the Bayes calculus and the Bayes' theorem. Bayes' theorem equals conditional probability. Bayes' calculus means close your eyes, go through the formalities, get something out, and hope that it makes sense. Okay, so that's what I mean by Bayes calculus, which is this thing here. And if that makes sense, it's a probability distribution, okay. So what I want to do is raise the question, if there is a conditional probability here, what is its nature? And there are going to be some difficulties. We know that there are some problems that arise with this that have to do with the fact that this distribution may be associated with, there may be some y values for which you can't do this because the denominator might be infinite, might not be normalizable. So in that sense, it's not the same as the ordinary Bayes' theorem. And then there are these marginalization paradoxes, David Stone and Zidek. and we have to address those. So that's, for those of you who are not familiar, I know many of you will be familiar with these paradoxes. I know Art for sure is, because he was a discussant of this paper. But this little example will just suffice to illustrate what the paradox is. So this is just two exponentials, independent. They're both being observed. One of them has parameter phi, the other is parameter theta times phi. Those are the, I guess, means or inverse means. We're interested in the ratio of the means. So it's a two-parameter model, and so in the ratio of the means. And we're taking the improper prior. So pi is proper, and then we have an improper part, d phi. So the first analysis would say, okay, you observe x, y, write down the joint density, write down the posterior, integrate out the parameter of interest, and you get the posterior distribution for theta after you're integrating phi. You get proportional to that. And the thing to notice about this is that the posterior only depends on the ratio of y to x. And so that naturally raises the question, well, if the posterior only depends on the ratio of y to x, couldn't I have just done the analysis directly on the ratio? So, and the ratio in this case is y over x, and there's a parameter associated with the ratio, which is theta. And the ratio as a random variable has a distribution that depends on, it's an F distribution, F1, 2, and 2, degrees of freedom, distribution equal to that. And you calculate, well, you just plug in, well, it doesn't, if you just plug in pi of theta d theta, you get the answer over there on the right. And clearly these are different. One of them has a square and the other has a 2 and the other has a 3. But in fact, you couldn't get the first answer no matter what density you put in to the second, as far as I know. So there's an apparent contradiction there. There is a prior that gives the same answer both ways, but I chose one that would give different answers. Okay, so somehow or another, if there is a theorem associated with improper priors, it has to be able to say something about this. Either something is right or something is wrong, or this can happen or whatever. So let's try to do that. Yes.
Okay, I can certainly do that. But I'm in a topological problem here.
Better? Okay. Okay, I've been through that. Right, so just let's see what Bayes' theorem, devoid of any of these religious connotations, what it does. It takes this family of probability distributions that the frequentist has to begin with. It then creates a random element, which I will call y, t, in the product space. It says by taking a random, by generating the parameter randomly according to pi, you then have a random element, which is an ordered pair in the product space, and then you calculate the conditional distribution given y. So the question I'm asking is, can we do something similar? Can we associate with the improper mixture and this family of distributions some sort of random, not element, but random object in the product space? So we're associating with the family and this improper measure some sort of random object in the product space. We observe something which is going to be a piece of this object. pretty much always what you observe in some sense has to be finite, so you have to bear that in mind. So we observe some aspect of this object, a projection in some sense, and then we compute the conditional distribution given the observation. That's all I'm going to do. So I'm not going to deviate from probability theory, and the question is what sort of random object, and I'm going to consider in this talk the simplest sort of random object that's not a random element, which is a random subset. That's what I'm saying. An object is anything in the space. So an object in the first setup is an element. In the first setup, in the standard Bayes setup, an object is one element. And in this setup, the object, I'm being deliberately vague about it, but it is going to be a random subset. Yes. So one of them is an element, the other is a subset. So what I'm going to do here is generate a random subset in the product space. I could have perhaps had a more imaginative sort of object, but it is going to be a random countable random subset, and I'm going to, and then I have to say what I mean by a piece of it. So okay, but it'll be okay. So this is following on from the discussion of the David Stone-Zidek paper. Can't remember if Lindley's remarks were actually made in the discussion or in the subsequent paper, but he was rather perturbed about these paradoxes, and he made the obvious remark, I suppose, that Bayes' theorem, as opposed to the Bayes calculus, Bayes' theorem needs a joint probability distribution, and therefore improper priors should be swept out. So I agree with him in the first bit that you do need a probability distribution, but it doesn't have to be on the product space. It doesn't have to be a random element in the product space. It could be a random subset in the product space. That's a joint distribution. Then you can, that's enough to calculate conditional distribution. So in that sense, I agree with Lindley's thesis, but not with his conclusion. And it's a fine point, but an important one. So this is the issue, that the proper Bayes generates a random element, the measure generates a random subset just by the Poisson process. And then the question is now, having observed something, can we then apply Bayes' theorem? Well, we have a probability distribution on random subsets, and in principle it's just a matter of calculating the conditional distribution, but it's going to be of a slightly different type. So before we delve into this, maybe I should draw a picture here. I should have had this on the slide, but my drawing ability in these things is not good. So here, this is the parameter. This is the parameter. Let's just call it the parameter space. It's the domain in which we ultimately want to say something about, which doesn't actually have to be the parameter space. So ordinarily, an element in here, whether it's random or fixed, we will denote by theta. And then associated with theta, we're going to generate a random sequence, x1, x2, all the way. And that's going to be associated with theta, with distribution. So p theta is associated with theta, and this x has the distribution p theta. Now, the observation here is going to be so I will, in terms of notation here, there are going to be three sorts of spaces that I'm talking about. When I talk about parametric inference in the conventional sense, I will talk about theta. The observation is going to be the observation space is going to be finite n Rn. We're talking about sequences. But sometimes I might want to make inferences, sample space inferences about the subsequent sequence, the next value, and maybe even the infinite trajectory. So when I talk about inferences, I will typically be talking about this part of the space, subsequent sequences, or theta, but definitely not about the beginning of the sequence. Okay, so now let's just get back to Poisson processes. So S0 times S1. So this is S0 as Rn. S1 is either this, the subsequent trajectory, or this space. So I'm talking now in the abstract about, in the general, about Poisson processes in this product space. If you have a measure in the product space, the mu is the measure, in the product space, you can generate a Poisson process associated with it if a particular condition is satisfied. This condition is not sigma finiteness, it's something else. Sigma finiteness is sufficient, but it's not necessary. And the real condition that you need to generate a Poisson process from a measure is countability. The measure has to be countable. This is the countability condition. And pretty much any measure that more or less any of you could come up with in 5 minutes would be countable. So even the measure that takes the value infinity on all sets of positive Lebesgue measure, for example, was countable. If you want a non-countable, an example of a non-countable measure on the real line, the easiest one to take is just associates with every step the number of elements that are in it. That's not a countable measure, and you cannot generate a Poisson process associated with it. But nearly any reasonable measure doesn't have to be locally finite or anything like that. You can associate with it a Poisson process. So I'm going to be talking, this is pretty general, so nearly any measure has that. And that means if you have then in the product, and this countability condition guarantees that the number of elements with probability 1 will be countable. So that means that you can list them in order. So every element in the product space is an ordered pair, and there is a way, because it's countable, of listing them in order. Now, when you list them in order, they won't, you know, in some sense, the distribution of the first one won't be the same as the distribution of the second one in order. So you have to be careful about this. This is just a matter of being existence of a listing. And now when I talk about the so there's a y and the x here, that's the y is going to be the bit, the projection onto the bit that I'm going to observe onto the first n components, and the x is going to be the projection onto the second bit of the space, which will be either the subsequent trajectory or the parameter space, as the case may be. It doesn't make any difference. And because of this countability condition is closed under projections, these projections will also be Poisson point processes as well. So that's one of the reasons for this condition rather than sigma finiteness, because sigma finiteness doesn't have any nice properties like this. Okay, so all of the measures I'm talking about are like this. We're going to observe first n components, and then whatever comes in the other product component of the product space, we're going to be interested in making predictions about. Now, think about a Poisson process, let's say, on the real line. What does it mean on the whole real line? What does it mean to make an observation on it? Well, it typically means that you have to pick a region, which would usually be an interval, but more or less any set in the language is called a test set. Pick a set, but it has to be a set on which the number of points is going to be finite. This is quite important. If the number of points is not finite, then the next slide is not going to be applicable. So the sampling region, so the term sampling region is a region in this space, the first n components, such that has finite measure, and therefore with probability 1 there will be finitely many points. So the observation is just a set of points that occur in A, and that includes the number of points. And the target for inferences, at least as I've set it up here, is the subsequent sequence, but it could be the parameter space as well. And when I say a subsequent sequence, I could mean the tail trajectory of any one of them. Right. So bear in mind now, what is the setup now? It's not that we have a single random element associated with a sequence. We have, you know, theta 1, theta 2, theta 3, you know, there's an infinite number of them, and, you know, there's there's sequences associated with theta 3. So there's an infinite number of sequences now. My notation might not be consistent here, so X, Y's, and Z's, whatever they mean, they mean. But the first n components is going to be what's observed. And then, having observed the first n components, you want to say something. Backtrack again. So we're talking now, the observation space is Rn, so let's draw a picture of Rn here. We don't observe everything that's in Rn because there would be infinitely many events in Rn, and that's, I'm not allowing that. So somewhere in here there has to be a set A that has finite measure, and there will be, so maybe x1 bracket n lies in here, maybe x2, first n components of x2 lies outside A, so we don't get to observe it, and so on. So what we get to observe is whatever bits, whichever of these sequences, the first n components of them lie in A. That's what we get to observe. There might be none. That's the other thing that you have to bear in mind in this setup, at least formally. There might be nothing there. So when I say the observation space is Rn, I don't mean that we get to see everything in the space. There's a sampling protocol, which is the set. The observation is what occurs in that set. And then there's the question of what inference is for. And in the description that comes up here, let's see. Right, so this is just a summary of what the issues are now. I've set it up now as a probability distribution. It's on not a single sequence, but an infinite number of sequences, of which a finite number are observed. So in the trivial case, if there's nothing occurs in this set, then I'm in good shape. I don't have anything to say to anybody. But assume that there's something occurs in this set, we label, and it'll be finite, so we can label them in 1 to m. It's important that this labeling be independent of the process. So that means that you have to generate a random, you label them initially whatever way you want, smallest to largest. Then you have to randomly relabel them uniformly. And then given M, these values are IID. This is a standard property of Poisson processes. They're IID. And you can divide through by this, since it's by assumption it's positive and finite. And then the joint things, this is the observed bit and the subsequent trajectory, are IID with that density. And therefore the conditional distribution is this. This is Bayes' theorem for this sort of setup. So what I've done then is I have taken the model, which is this family of distributions, and the improper prior. I have associated with those a random object, which is not a random point, but a random subset. I've said what an observation consists of, and this is not the same as the conventional notion of an observation, because if there's only one point here, there will only be one sequence, then you don't have to have this test set. So the test set has to be in there to make this thing finite. And I've calculated Bayes' theorem. So this is Bayes' theorem under these conditions. And the things too that I want to point out about it here, and I should have said that just one of these factors is what you would get by applying the Bayes calculus blindly. So this is a product of the factors that you would get by applying the ordinary Bayes calculus. So, but this is a conditional distribution. I haven't done anything beyond probability theory here. And what properties does it have? Well, remember, it's conditional. So once I condition on y, I know how many of these there are. Let's suppose that it's one. So this is just one dx, and that's just the ordinary Bayes calculus applied to that one observation. If there are several of these, then there is the possibility that let's say there's y1 and y2 here, then there will be an x1 and an x2 here. It's quite possible, logically, that the distribution of x1 might depend on the number of y's that occurred in this region A. But that doesn't, in fact, happen. So not only do we have conditional independence here, but the components of the x only depend on the corresponding component of the y, which means that, let's say that there were two x1 and x2 in this region, and they happen to be these two. I want to predict the next components in this sequence. Well, xn plus 1 and so on. The distribution of this, given the whole stuff back here, will not depend on what was down here. It only depends on the previous trajectory of that sequence. Yes. Yeah. No, infinitely many. It's a Poisson point process, and I'm assuming that the mu is infinite. If it's finite, then you can just make it IID with that many. But this is an infinite number. Right. So it's not just conditional independence that you have down here. It's lack of interference that the subsequent the predictions for the subsequent trajectory, or the, you know, this one is associated with the parameter point. This one is associated with the parameter point. The probability distribution for this, given everything that you've observed back here, only depends on the bits that you have observed that are related to that particular parameter point, not on how many occurred in the space or anything of that sort. So this is Bayes' theorem. So I had always regarded the use of improper priors as being anti-Bayesian in some ways, non-Bayesian, certainly not probability theory. I mean, my interpretation of Bayes is probability theory, and so the use of Bayes calculus, at least formally, is not within probability theory, as Lindley pointed out. But in fact, with this notion, you can incorporate it into probability theory, and you get this. But this is not the same as the conventional Bayes theorem. So let me just go through some remarks about why this is different. What's different about this expression up top, and what limitations it imposes? First of all, there is this finiteness assumption. It's saying if there exists a test set, it's all on the assumption that this test set exists. And in general, this test set won't exist. Certainly, the whole space will not satisfy this condition. That finiteness assumption, I should have said zero less than mu naught of A. Obviously, I could choose the empty set, and that would satisfy. That would be less than infinity, but there'd be nothing in it, so that would be not very useful. So there's a conditional independence of the trajectories, and there's a lack of interference. Right, so the role of this test set, it's a peculiar one. First of all, there's no guarantee that it exists, but if it does exist, then in some sense it doesn't matter. Okay, but the existence is rather important. And let's see. So as Keith pointed out, then we have an infinite, in some sense, there is an infinite number of parameters, one for every sequence. So the inferential goal is, for every thing that you observe in here, of which there will be multiple, there will be a parameter associated with each one, and you're interested in those parameters jointly. Okay. Countability condition. Signal. So there's no guarantee that this exists. And even if it does exist, there may be some points in this space or some regions in this space for which the marginal measure is infinite, and the test set can't include any such sets. So that's this one here. So we see examples of this in a moment. Nancy, how much time do I have? 5 minutes. Okay, so there's enough time to go through one of the examples. These are all elementary standard examples here. And in this first example, I'm taking the usual parametric setup, Rn being the observation space and the parameter space rather than the subsequent trajectories, although it doesn't matter, they're in one-to-one correspondence more or less. Right. And I'm just taking d mu d theta over sigma to the p. I don't know why there's no p there on the third line, but they're judging by this, there should be a p. So d mu d sigma over sigma to the p, where p equal to 1 is the sort of one that's usually recommended, the improper one. But the marginal measure on the parameter space has a density, which is this. So the question is, can you find, now for any n, the marginal measure on the parameter space is that. Now the question is, can you find me a test set that I can use as an observation? As a region of observation. Obviously, the whole space is no good because the measure will be infinite. And the fact is that no test set will exist unless this gamma factor is finite. So you need p, you need two conditions. You need n to be at least 2 less than or greater than or equal to 2, and you need n to be strictly less than 2 minus p. So if p is 1, n equal to 2, is sufficient. But you see, the ordinarily Bayes' theorem will apply even if n is 0. You have to bear that in mind, that even for n equal to 0, you can calculate Bayes' theorem, and it's saying that the probability distribution for theta is just the same as the prior. This setup is not doing that. It's not giving you a probability distribution unless the sample size is such that you can do this, that you can find a test set. So you need n to be at least 2. And then if that is the case, what do the conclusions look like? Have I gone the wrong direction? Right. Yes, so that's what I was saying, that the proper Bayes applies for every n, and the improper one, the point process one, let me just read what this is. It says if you have observed if you have observed a test set with finite measure, that means n bigger than 2, the probability distribution on the parameter space, given the observation y and for a particular element in y, so it's a little... the formal statement is a little bit more complicated. It's equal to this. It's the usual statement, the usual improper Bayes statement, and it's independently, conditionally independently for all of the points in Y. The first version is not correct for improper mixture, so these statements are different. So there is a all I'm saying is there is a Bayes theorem, but it's a different, structurally a different theorem for for improper mixtures. That previous version that I gave with the usual one, looking at the parameter space as being the domain of inference. But yeah, I could have left the parameter space out of it altogether and just considered the infinite sequences and the subsequent trajectories as the domain of inference. And this is the measure again, the marginal measure. And given that we have observed whatever number of elements in A, the distribution for the subsequent trajectories, well, they're all conditionally independent, and the conditional distribution is just given by this ratio. And it's just an exchangeable student T on this many degrees of freedom with, and I'll explain that in layman's terms, in ways that may be more familiar to fiducialists. This is just a fiducial statement. But if you take the point process that I constructed, taking d mu d sigma, d sigma over sigma to the p in the parameter space here, you construct these things as a Poisson process, as IID sequences. You generate these points, generate these IID sequences, then you observe x1 and x2. That will define a point process in R2. It will be a Poisson point process, and this will be its intensity measure, dy1, dy2, divided by y1 minus y2 to the power p. Essentially the same. There's actually a constant missing here, but the constant is in fact equal to 1 if p is equal to 2, and it's something else if p is not 2. So what that means is that having observed, so this measure is, of course, sigma finite. It also means that you can find these test sets. You just have to be a little careful about the diagonal, but otherwise you can find these test sets. And the rule just says that you can extend, having observed x1 and x2, you can extend sequentially according to the Gossett rule, which I have written here. You just take the average of the previous ones, square root of the sample variance multiplied by this factor, and these epsilon n's being independent student t. So that's, and for p equal to 2, that's the ordinary fiducial, whatever you would call it, predictive fiducial distribution. Okay. And that's about time. Okay, well, I will stop there then, if that's the time. Thank you.